From KMUW Wichita.
From Toronto, Ontario.
And from Armilla, Spain.
This is You're Saying It Wrong. Let's talk words. Let's talk about the season. Let's talk about spring. I'm Fletcher Powell, host and producer at KMUW in Wichita, Kansas. And joining me, of course, language experts and New York Times bestselling authors Kathy Petras and Ross Petras. Hello, Kathy Petras at your home in Armilla. Hello, Ross. You are there at your home in Toronto. You know, last week we were talking about past participles. So now, can I say something like spring has sprung?
You can.
Spring has sprung. And you know the whole poem, though, don't you, Fletcher?
Oh, God, no. Of course not. What is it?
Spring has sprung.
The grass is riz. I wonder where the flowers is. The bird is on the wing. Ain't that absurd? I always thought the wing was on Du Bois. Sorry.
Wow.
That's really bad.
But before we go to spring, we're going to bring something else up. Okay, so this is an email from Cheryl from Manitoba. I have noticed some people use bring and take interchangeably. Are they, though? I use bring for an action coming toward me and take for an action going away. Yet I hear this. The shirt didn't fit. Are you going to bring it back to the store? If the person works at the store who is speaking it, then bring is appropriate. Mm-hmm. Am I missing something? Actually, I'm curious, Fletcher, is she missing something or not?
I think I would say it basically the way she does. Are you going to bring that back to the store? Yeah, I definitely would not say that if I were talking to somebody. I would say, are you going to take that back?
It's funny, though, now that I'm looking at it, because we're going to talk, obviously, about, you're right, usually it's bring and take is different. But when I'm right now, I'm thinking, are you going to bring it back to the store? Doesn't sound that wrong to me, oddly.
Here's one that Merriam-Webster had. I'm going to ask you to this one. Bring the dictionary with you to the pub. Take the dictionary with you to the pub.
Why am I bringing a dictionary to the pub?
Because you're going to quiz people and you're going to win a free drink after you quiz them.
Am I going to the pub with that person or not? You know, I think that makes a difference. If I'm either already at the pub or I'm going to meet them at the pub, then I would say bring, because it's coming to the place I'm going to be. But if I'm telling them to do something and they're going there, then I would say take the dictionary to the pub. You are going to the pub. You take that dictionary to the pub.
Mm-hmm. They were saying, and I kind of agree with them, it doesn't really make that much of a difference. Right now, let's say we're all sitting at your room having coffee. And for some reason, you want to go to the pub, even though it's in the morning. But whatever, we will deal with that part of it. And I'm going to tell you to bring, I'm saying with right now, Fletcher, are you going to bring the dictionary to the pub? Or are you going to take the dictionary to the pub? I think take, I would say there.
Yeah. It's funny. It's funny to think about. Okay, so if the three of us are sitting around at the same table having coffee, and I say, I'm going to go to the pub. And you said, yeah, bring this. And you handed me a dictionary. I might think you were going to go with me because you said bring it. But if you said, yeah, take this, then I definitely would not think that you were going
with
me.
Okay, for me, I think you do the bring this. It's like bring it with you.
Yeah.
But you're taking it there. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
For me, the bringing is the possession.
I got it, Kathy. I think Kathy is right. That's what I see it as, too.
Bring this with you. Take this with you. Bring it with you is sort of like, it's with me. Take it is, I'm bringing it there. God!
I think the bottom line is, don't worry overly much about it.
I think that we should bring a drink with us when we discuss this.
I think we should bring spring into our discussion.
I think that is the thought that sprang to my mind, Ross.
We're going to talk about spring today, but this really fascinated both Kathy and me. Fletcher, did you know the early word for spring before spring became the word to use? Do you know what it was?
before spring in English, or how far are we going back?
In English. We're going English.
We're going before the 14th century in old English.
Yeah, okay.
Or English. Right.
Or Middle English, yeah.
Does it have something to do with vernal?
No.
Okay. Then no, I have
Which
no idea.
Which I would have thought logical.
We both thought so too. But, sure. I mean, but it's not really the word. The key thing is what the word meant. I did not know this.
Oh, interesting. Tell me.
What they used to refer to as, like, instead of saying spring is sprung, they would go, Lent is here.
It was Lent.
Oh,
Lent.
Really? Lent.
Now, I always thought of it as a religious, you know, sort
sure,
of religious
of
thing, which of course we do. But do you know what Lent meant?
Spring is sprung. Grass is
sprung. Do you know what Lent meant?
No, of course not.
I did not know this, nor did Kathy. It came from the Old English lengthen.
Lengthen?
Lengthen.
Yes. Lengthen, which meant lengthen.
The increasing length of daylight.
Oh, isn't that amazing?
Wow.
Isn't that cool?
That is very cool.
Because I agree. Lent to me is definitely like a Christian thing.
Sure.
Yeah.
And no idea other than that. I never knew it was related to this. And you didn't get, you got spring only came in the 1500s. It was Lent.
That is lovely. So did we end up with two different things because of the Christian Lent? Why did we change? Do we know?
No one's really sure. First of all, spring itself is an old English word. Mm-hmm. Springen meaning to leap, kind of burst up. So obviously it probably has, roots.
So to speak.
I said it automatically too. But it has roots to like German words, springen, etc.
Okay.
And it makes sense. A springy word to describe that time of year. Stuff is springing out, but they're not sure why Lent went away.
I'm wondering if you figure it did get like aggressively used, meaning the 40 days leading up to Easter, if you had to be specific then. So if you're just talking about Lent, or you're talking about Lent, do you know what I mean? It's like, it's Lent and I the grass is green and it's Lent and I can't eat like fun stuff.
That makes a lot of sense, Kath. I think that's a really good point. Lent became more and more religious, and then you needed another word to like counter that religious aspect.
Mm-hmm.
So speaking of Lent, Easter now, what's the origin of Easter?
The word Easter? This is another thing that I've always wondered about. Was it more of a generic term sometime back, and it started to be used for the Christian holiday, or has it always just been that holiday?
Well, let's backward. Just 2 seconds ago, you said the right thing. It actually has an earlier, according to Bede, the Venerable Bede, who wrote it.
As a kid, I always loved that term. I'm sorry.
The Venerable Bede.
That absolutely swayed me.
I was sort of curious, though, because like, I got it confused. Oddly enough, I mean, it was a joke, and I've read it, the Vulnerable Bede. But as a kid, I actually got that confused. I wasn't sure, like, is it vulnerable or venerable? I didn't quite get it. Bede apparently, though, did write, Easter is derived from Eostre, which is a Germanic goddess of spring.
Okay.
And then it basically, what happened a lot of times when Christianity came into various areas, it pulled into these things and made them, basic holidays themselves, and Christian holidays that way too.
Sure. So they took a non-Christian holiday, or in this case, the name of a goddess and sort of absorbed that.
Yeah, because they say her feast was celebrated in April. And then, because the Latin was Pascha, is that how it's pronounced?
Pascha, it's Greek, actually, originally.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, because I was saying the Paschal lamb and all that stuff. So.
Yeah. Actually, there's another word too, Fletcher. I'm just curious if you can guess this. Another word in the 1400s was also used in English for spring. And I'm going to ask you, I'm going to give you a hint.
Mm-hmm.
Who took over England in 1066?
The Normans.
Right. And they gave English another word for spring.
Is it related to the French? Isn't French like printemps?
Very good. Although they would have pronounced it in English, prime temps.
Prime temps.
That's horrible. Prime temps is bad. I'm glad that didn't stay on. That does not work.
I think we're going to cut that section out right here. I like prime temps.
I mean, one might argue that the weather is very lovely in the spring, and so you are having prime temps, aren't you?
Yeah.
It does not work.
To answer Kathy, though, I'm sort of curious about this because it comes from the Latin tempus primum, But they didn't use that word for spring. So I wonder how...
I'm assuming that, like, everybody hated how it sounded. They thought, let's just move along here. Nothing
well,
to
the Normans
at.
Were probably doing, plow, you know, plow, plow.
No, I'm sure. And you're like, happy little Anglo-Saxons.
I know. Yeah, yes, master. I'll get it ready for prime temps. Yeah.
Okay. Now let's move on, since you had said this before, vernal.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Now, do you know the origin of vernal?
No, I assumed it was Latin.
Good.
Okay, thank you. always a good assumption.
Let's move on.
Yes, always a good assumption here. Is like Vernus a god or something?
No, it just comes from Vernalis, which means spring.
Okay.
Although I like the idea of a god named Vern now. Vern. You know? Sorry.
It was where, a V-E-R, where it was spring in Latin.
Okay.
So it would have been Wernal.
Yes. But people started doing the V a lot of times in various countries, and probably the English who were talking about prime temps were probably doing Vernal too. So this one gets me because Kathy was shocked. I never thought about what this means.
I actually still am shocked, Roy.
She's still shocked. And I should have, I mean, I know the Latin words for it, but I never even like bothered thinking about it. Equinox or equinox.
Equinox. So equal. Oh, like the day and the night are the same. Equal nox. I mean, I guess that, is that night or no?
Yeah, you're right. You got it, Fletcher.
Perfect.
You did it. And it's traditionally defined as the time when the plane of the Earth's equator passes through the geometric center of the sun's disk. And then this is probably why I didn't bother thinking. I kind of like went, yeah. Equivalently, this is the moment when the Earth's rotation axis is directly perpendicular to the sun-Earth line. But I think I didn't want to think about it, so I just sort of blipped over it. Uh-huh. So
I'm interested, Ross, that you said sun's disk. I don't think I've ever used that term in my life. I would just say the sun, the geometric center of the sun.
Yeah, you're right, actually. But I think that when the person who wrote that, I think they're thinking of, you know, the
plate in the middle.
Yeah, I think they're thinking of that. So, but that's a good point, Kathy.
Okay, we're going to do now other words that remind us of spring.
Yes.
This word is balmy.
Balmy, oh.
Balmy outside. Now, can you figure out, we're going to be multiple choice now. We're making it a little easier. Is it from a Proto-Indo-European word meaning warm? Is it from a Latin word, balne, meaning bath? Or is it from a Semitic word meaning spice?
Ooh, balmy. I think it's just the warm. I think it's just that one, the first one.
Guess again, Fletcher. You have two more guesses.
I really like the one about spice, so let's go with that one.
That's it.
That is it. Okay, great.
It is it. It comes from the Semitic basham, basma, basam. Hebrew, Aramaic, Arabic. Balsam, spice, or perfume.
Oh.
That to me is so weird, though, because I don't think balmy, I think of as warm. I would have gone with warm if I hadn't researched this.
I would have, too.
I don't think of balmy weather as being like fragrant, like balsam in particular, which reminds me of Christmas.
Yeah, I don't get it either. I mean, they're saying, you know, basma, oily resinous. I mean, we know what balsam is. Aromatic substance exuding naturally from the shrubs of a tree.
I don't feel it. You know
no,
what I mean?
We did a little bit
really
of research
don't.
On it, too. But one thing they said was delicately fragrant, which I think may give us a clue as to how it happened. It's like a delicate, maybe it was not used like heavily. It was a delicate, fragrant kind of smell. And then from there we get the delicate idea. And then from there we get the, you know, soft breezes in spring. That's what I get. I like my shh.
It was very evocative.
Yeah.
You were describing, Ross, a bucolic scene.
Yes,
were you
bucolic.
Not?
Yes, I was, Kathy.
Do you want to give Fletcher his three choices?
Yes. It's what is it most related to, the origin of the word? What does it derive from? One, bulls. Two, beetles. Three, blooms.
I think it's bulls. I think it's that one.
Excellent, Fletcher.
Is
it
this? Okay, how? Tell me. I'm thinking of ossobuco, actually.
Oh, wow.
Interesting. I haven't had ossobuco in years, come to think of it.
That is really interesting. It comes from the Greek word bous, which is ox.
Okay.
Or in modern Greek, whatever, but you wouldn't pronounce the B in modern Greek. But bous, and then from there, relating to, then with the olic part, it basically relating to taking care of bulls, which is shepherds or pastoral. In that sense. And then from there, it was initially like, you know, just basically that. And then from there, it came to any sort of natural scene.
Yeah. So you had your bulls or oxen. Can you say ox? Can ox be plural, or does it have to be oxen?
Oxen. I don't know, actually. That's an interesting
You can
question.
Say oxes, I've seen. Oxes. I
you
never
can say
knew.
Oxes, yeah.
So basically, something bucolic was, you had those, your cattle out there, and then eventually it just became, right. It became more general and just a
yeah.
scene of nature.
And the kolos part is a Proto-Indo-European word going into Greek and Latin, you know, taking care of, cultivating in mm-hmm. that sense. Mm-hmm. So you're taking care of the bulls. And then from there, it became generally bucolic.
Yeah, because it was like you got your shepherds sitting outside, nice day with the bulls.
Yeah, with
balmy
the bulls.
Balmy day.
It was nice, very balmy.
Delicately fragrant with the bulls. Yeah,
yeah, and you're looking Certainly up and the fragrant. Sky goes, the equinox is here too, so it's perfect. Right.
And things are germinating.
Oh. Germinate.
This we know what germinate means. It's like sprouting or whatever. This is a different one. What came first, the word germinate or the word germination? The verb or the
right,
noun?
Right. Well, since you're asking, I'll bet germination came first. So we made the verb germinate because germination already existed.
Right. And this is an interesting sort of example. We've talked about it before, back formations in English.
So weird.
And they're kind of, it's sort of weird. We're talking early last week, I think we were talking about words going, you know, backwards into the verb forms, ablaut, adding ablaut into a regular verb. Here we're doing something, it seems like intuitively we think germinate comes first, but in this case it doesn't.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Where does germination come from? I remember a couple weeks ago we were talking about remediation and remedy and how remediate was a backformed verb. That came from remediation, which came from remedy. So where does this germination come from?
Well, it's not a back. It comes from the Latin, and it's not a back formation in Latin. In Latin, there's a verb germinare.
Oh, okay.
Which is to sprout. And uh-huh. then it comes from a word German, germ, I think you can think of, a sprout or a bud.
Yeah.
Mm.
And then from there, it got to a noun was created then, and then it, you know, past participle.
And then we went back and filled in the hole by making a verb that reflected the noun that reflected the earlier verb.
Yeah.
Okay.
But the one problem we do have with Latin, for example, like I said that, but then there's a lot written in Roman Latin, but there's not an amazing amount. So I'm curious now, like I should check Pliny or whatever to see if germinationem is actually, was that used? I can't really tell you right now.
In Latin, you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah. But it does appear, I mean, it's a standard past participle form. But moving away from Latin, let's go to hatch.
Which doesn't sound very Latin.
As in hatching chicks.
Oh, yes.
The word stemmed from a word originally meaning to mate, to crack, or to be born.
Two of them seem too obvious. To mate, to crack, or to be born. Hatch chicks. It seems like it has to be crack or to be born, right? I don't know why it would be mate. So let's say to crack. We'll go with that one. Hatch.
Ha-ha! To mate.
Really?
Really? Yes. It originally was came from hashen in the early 13th century, and it meant to produce young from eggs by incubation.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't know exactly the Old English, but they think it's related to a Middle High German word to mate. Heckin', birds mating.
Hmm.
Okay, we're going to do quickly another quickie here. May Day, which is coming up.
Oh.
May Day, as in May Day with the association with communism, socialism, anarchism. When does that come into play?
Oh.
And where?
Well, let's see. Around 1910 or so was a real hotbed of communism and all of that. 1910, 1920. So I want to say that. Where? Eastern Europe.
Wrong. Wrong and wrong. I actually didn't realize what it went back. May Day as associated with communism. I would also argue it's much more of an international day of the worker, but that's just
yeah,
me.
Sure.
Dates back to 1890. I didn't realize it was then. And it started from a U.S. strike for an 8-hour workday, which began May 1st, 1886.
Great. Okay.
And then there was the Haymarket bombing, which I had forgotten all my history. And then by 1890, it all spread. May 1st became everything got spread across Europe by labor organizations to support the 8-hour day in commemoration of the first strike.
Oh, wow.
I didn't know that. Yeah. I thought that was interesting. I mean, it certainly had nothing to do with May Day, as in Maypole and,
right,
you know,
okay,
yeah,
dancing.
Yeah, I would have guessed it was a lot earlier, too. That's I mean, a lot later, like Fletcher did. I thought Fletcher
yeah,
was, I would I have agree. Guessed that. Here's another quickie little thing on May Day, which is kind of stretching away from spring.
But interesting.
Yeah, this one really was May Day as the airplane SOS.
Mm-hmm. Right.
What interested me the most was the previous, what was the previous distress call that people used? You know that.
For like airplanes?
For anything.
For anything.
I mean, SOS, I guess.
Right. And this was interesting phonologically, I can't even say was apparently the S was hard to hear by telephone. When you think about it, S can be S. F for, mm-hmm. you know, like, FOF? What does right. that guy want? Hang up the phone. Yeah. Yeah.
Really? Get him off the line.
Get
him
off the line, buddy. So in 1927, the International Radio Telegraph Convention in Washington, D.C. said another call, Kathy.
They chose May Day, and they thought it sounds like the French May Day. I can't
May Day,
it.
Yeah.
May Day, which means help me. They're saying, oh, which is clever,
right.
Very cute. Uh-huh. But why May Day? Why not, like, you know, help me?
Well, I think maybe the MD, or, I mean, you know, they always do the letters, you know, like Alpha, Romeo, whatever.
Yeah, yeah, Charlie, Bronco,
yeah.
Mustang.
I think May is easy. May, like, mom, dad. I mean, I'm really half wondering, like, ma and da are very early words in English, and they're easy to say, and they're not
May Day,
confusable.
May Day, yeah. Help me. May Day is easy. May Day, May
yeah.
Day. You're right.
Yeah.
Yeah. May Day sounds better than SOS. It does. May
I
Day
agree
sounds
with
cooler,
you.
Doesn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, just going to communication, obviously SOS was easy to hear when you were using the Morse code, right?
Right. Did it, da, 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 did it, did it. Yeah.
Right,
it's
right.
Three dits. Three da's and three dits.
Yeah, that changes when you are saying things. And so as
yeah.
communication changes, we need to, yeah, May Day, May Day, yeah.
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 So while we're at it, though, Fletcher, where did the word May come from?
May. Just like the month of May?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, besides Latin.
Yep. You got it from Latin.
Of course.
From Maia, the Roman earth goddess, the wife of Vulcan.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes sense, right?
Yeah, and it's probably originally Magia, she who is great, which I sort of like. She who is great.
Uh-huh.
Here's
I
another
think
little...
I'm going to take that on as a definition myself.
Yeah, but I like this other early English word, the old English word for May. It's Thrimmilke. Okay, can you guess what that... Thrimmilke Monath.
Thrimmilke Monath.
If you just listen to the Thrimmilke, you might get it.
Thrimmilke. No, all I can hear is like three milks. I don't
right.
know.
Right. Oh. You got it. It's three milk month.
Three milk month?
Cows were milked three times a day in the beautiful days of spring.
In three milk.
Yeah, isn't that cool?
Yeah.
In prime temps.
Exactly, Kathy. Yes.
And now April, where I can quickly do my Juan de April with a shoe de sote, but I'll stop right now. My little Chaucerian impulse. What about April? Where'd that come from, Fletcher?
April. Well, that I mean, it's very similar to the French, so it's probably from Latin somehow. but
poor
I don't.
Fletcher.
But I don't know what an April was, unless it's yet another deity.
Well, you're doing really well, Fletcher, I have to
yeah?
say. Although you may be wrong with the Latin, it could come from Etruscan.
Oh, sure.
Ain't
oh, naturally.
Latin.
Yeah.
That's before Latin. And they think it might be apru, the Etruscan word for the Greek Aphrodite. Maybe not, though. No one really knows.
Apru is not a great name. Aphrodite's much nicer.
I think so, too. But, Kathy, you're Greek in background, so you have a little anti-Etruscan bias.
Sorry to all our Etruscan listeners.
Yeah, please, Etruscan listeners.
We apologize. I was going to do so. I can't. I was trying to get from apologize to pollen, but it's not working for me. So the next word is pollen.
Pollen, uh-huh. Okay.
This probably stems from a word related to polenta or porridge. Pollux, as in Castor and Pollux, the son of Zeus, when Zeus seduced Leda in swan form. Or the Old English pool.
Definitely, absolutely a word related to polenta.
You're right. right.
Yeah.
Oh, Ma, how'd you think that?
I thought about the, you make polenta with like the cornmeal.
So
I thought about the little bits of cornmeal and how that relates to like pollen, you know,
because pollen
can look like little bits of cornmeal, right?
Yeah. That's it. It started as the botanical term for the fine yellowish dust that, you know, fertilizes flowers, which came from the Latin, of course, or possibly the Greek poltas, meaning porridge in Sanskrit. But yeah, polenta.
Good show.
I love it.
Okay, this is a good one. Prune, which is what you begin to do in spring as
like
a verb.
Prune your plants and stuff?
Yes, not drink your prune juice. This is the plant. The original meaning of prune, the verb, was, it comes from an old French word, pruinen, to trim feathers with a beak. From the Latin pruna, a live coal burning off excess. From the old French prudent, deliberate, by the way the Latin prudens, circumspect.
I would like to say the old French prudent is also prudent, how we would pronounce it.
All right.
Prudens, yeah. Prudent. And
as
prudence.
We who say prince temp, prime temp.
Prime temps.
Say it.
I like those. I like all of those. I like the one about trimming feathers with your beak the most, though, so I'm going with that one.
Fletcher, I think we're going to quit this show right now.
I got it. Look at the time, Ross.
I know. We have to leave.
Come on.
This one, we thought we got him on this one, but you're completely correct. To trim the feathers with the beak.
Maybe if we didn't have beak in there, we would have gotten it.
I still like it, but I did like it more with the beak. I'll say that.
And then it got into to groom oneself carefully. And then in old French, it became to cut back vines or to prune.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I would just like to say, using it as a person to dress or groom oneself carefully, I'd never heard in my life.
But you've heard of the word preen, haven't you?
Preen, yes, you're right.
Preen seems to be derived from prune.
Neat.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah, it is. And you know, you think more about preen. You could think more like a bird preening now, right? You wouldn't really talk about a bird preening.
Yeah, when you say the beak now makes sense.
Yeah, it does. Isn't it interesting?
The beak angle.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Let's all drink some preen juice.
No. Okay, this is our next question, Fletcher. How did we get prune the fruit from... Do you remember, I'm sorry, side note, when they kept on pushing dried plums instead of prunes?
I know. That was not a good idea.
Anyway, how did we get prune the fruit from prune, the act of lopping off superfluous branches?
Okay, so it did come from it.
We're not saying anything.
Oh.
That's a big clue there, Fletcher.
Fletcher, you should not have asked that.
I would have assumed that they were not related. But
nope, you're right.
Oh.
They're not related.
All right.
No, it's weird. It comes from a Greek word, prunon, I guess. I actually don't know the Greek word, but it's a plum tree. And it probably comes from Anatolia.
Oh, okay.
A language from Asia Minor. They have no idea where, you know, from there.
I do love this. They say the slang meaning disagreeable or disliked person is from 1895. Have you ever heard someone say, oh my God, what a prune?
What a prune.
No, actually, it's funny you said that, guys, because I was thinking the same thing. And I was trying to like think back on books or things I've read from the 1800s. I've never heard it, but I'm sure it was said. I'm going to look
like
it up now.
I
think we should bring it back.
Yeah.
Okay, this is a really weird one. I didn't know it, nor did Kathy. And I'm curious if you do. I think we can guess what it is. Do you know what a blackberry winter is?
No, I do not.
It's really cool. It was used in the south regions of the states. And it's kind of, a boring word would be cold snap. And they're saying it came from chilly weather appearing after blackberry plants have begun to bloom.
Oh, wow.
I have never heard that term.
Yeah. Listen, it's also called after winter, blackthorn winter, dogwood winter, and redbud winter, or whippoorwill winter, locust winter.
That's funny. I can't think of any phrases like that we have around here. I mean, cold snap is what you'd hear, right?
Yeah, that's what you would hear. And then apparently in Vietnam and all over East Asia, they have different words in their languages for basically a blackberry winter as well. But colloquialisms, not just cold snaps. What I loved was, I have no idea where this comes from, Lindsay Woolsey Riches Winter. Is another.
Well, Lindsay Woolsey was sort of itchy. It was a fabric.
Itchy. Yeah, they said it was like long underwear. Lindsay Woolsey Riches Winter. So you'd have that, like you put away your long underwear and then you have to get it back out again.
I like Blackberry Winter. That sounds like the name, though, of a sort of like a 1920s novel, doesn't it?
I was going to say it sounds like a romance, like a teen romance from 1950 or something. Uh-huh.
Well, there was a teen romance called Blueberry Summer that you might have remembered as a child.
I remembered that.
I still have it.
This last one, Kath, we should do. Kath and I were both fascinated by this. Do this one, Kath. Remember that?
Okay, we'll just start with the word slicker.
Slicker. Okay.
Yeah.
Is that like your raincoat or whatever?
Yeah.
Right. Uh-huh. Waterproof raincoat. Curiously, though, we're going to move on, but when do you figure roughly when that came around? 1800s, 1900s? What do you think? Earlier?
No, not earlier. Honestly, it seems like early 20th century to me, but that sometimes means it's late 19th century.
Yeah, it's the late 1800s. Okay. Yeah. Okay. And then the meaning when you said like a city slicker, that came about a little after that. So I'm assuming it's a thing. But speaking of raincoats.
Yeah, this was the cool one. This was the really cool one that I never knew. Trench coat.
Oh, like a coat that you wear in the trench. Not related to World War One.
You got it. It did.
Oh.
But neither of us ever thought of that.
Always said trench coat.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
I picture sort of a khaki coat. I used to have a bunch. Yeah.
I've never thought about it either till you made me think about the actual words involved just now.
Yeah. It's so weird when you look at each, because it's a portmanteau and you just think of a trench and a coat. Now that you think about it, but I just think of it as trench coat, Humphrey Bogart. There
right.
you go.
I do too.
You
know? Yeah. Yeah.
I won't do my Humphrey Bogart imitation then.
do it, Kathy. No.
Here's looking at you, kid.
Oh, that's good.
Not good.
Like John Wayne.
maybe it's John Wayne doing Humphrey Bogart.
I like that, Fletcher. Here's looking at. That's terrible too. Forget
yeah, that was pretty
was that,
bad.
Was that Sean Connery doing Humphrey Bogart?
I noticed Fletcher hasn't tried.
Yeah, that's true. Goodbye. You're Saying It Wrong is part of the NPR network and is produced in the studios of KMUW in Wichita, Kansas by me, Fletcher Powell. Kathy Petras records from her home in Armilla, Spain. Ross Petras from his home in Toronto, Ontario in Canada. Torrin Anderson composed our theme music and our digital team is Beth Golay, Kate Hutchins, and Carly Cooper. You can find all of our past episodes by subscribing to the You're Saying It Wrong podcast wherever you get your podcasts or by visiting us at kmuw.org. If you have a question for Kathy and Ross, if you'd like to suggest a topic, or you just want to reach out, you can email me at powell@kmuw.org or email them at kandrpetras@gmail.com. You can also email us a voice memo of you asking it your question. You might get your voice heard on air. If you'd like to do the same thing by downloading the KMUW app, you can do that and just click the Talk to Us button. You can find all of Kathy and Ross's books pretty much anywhere you get books, and a handful of them are also available on audiobook, read by the authors themselves. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week.
Each morning, it's a new opportunity, a chance to start fresh. Up First from NPR makes each morning an opportunity to learn and to understand. Choose to join the world every morning with Up First, a podcast that hands you everything going on across the globe and down the street, all in 15 minutes or less. Start your day informed and anew with Up First by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts.